It's a remarkable recovery that he's made from that serious surgery. Really good to see him this morning. We've been talking about relationships. I've had about 15 lessons on it. This is the 15th, I think, specific lesson that I've done on this series, spread over more time than that, because others have been up here on occasion and I've been gone and all those things. But this is really important. I think a church, as I think I said here, I know I said it somewhere, that a church is only as strong as its relationships. If the relationships in the church, that is, if families are breaking down, the church will break down. There's no question about that in my mind. There's a lot of anecdotal history on that, but it just makes sense as well. So understanding our role with others is critical. Certainly the role of us in the church. The whole point of the mentoring classes that we've been having and discussing are to build the relationships. If these mentoring, the people entering in this mentoring relationship, excuse me, if they become mentors and mentees, they will profit individually. But I can tell you for sure that the church itself would become stronger if that's going on to any measurable degree. If we're helping each other in that way, you can leave your water up here. So anyway, we're going to talk about this. Now, what I'm going to talk about, in 2003, I did a series of lessons for parenting, and I called it How to Breed a Fool. Now, that's, in light of my lesson last week, that's a little sarcastic, I'm afraid. Well, let's call it ironic. But anyway, I got a little more sophisticated, so I rechanged it, how it's supposed to be not to breed a fool. How not to breed a fool. The type didn't come out. The font didn't come out. But how not to breed a fool. That softens up. And it's really what we're aiming for in parenting, is we don't want to breed fools. Most of the lessons about parenting in that series come from the book of Proverbs, in which the word fool is used a lot of times, needless to say. Most of you know that. So we're going to be talking about that, but something occurred to me that there's something we've got to do first, or something that some of you have to do before we get into the parenting class. There's a lot of people here who are parents, needless to say. Most of us are. A lot of people here who are young parents, and I think you do a marvelous job. Sometimes I am absolutely amazed at how quiet it is in here, given all the young kids we have. You do a really good job of correcting your kids and taking care of them and all that kind of thing. And we appreciate that very much. But I'm going to talk first to the kids. And we're going to talk about being a fool. I want to ask you not to be one, okay? Just don't be one. Okay, well, you got the fool here. Don't be a fool. That's where we need to start. If we're going to talk about how not to raise fools, not to breed fools, then we need to first talk to those who the Bible says are or tend to be foolish most of the time. Now, or a lot of the time, depending on how old they are. I always hated it when a preacher, and I still do, tell you the truth, I hate it when a preacher gets up and says, okay, I want to talk to you young people. And I just kind of cringe when I hear that, because usually it's sort of, I'm going to talk to you young people, and I'm going to, you know, and it kind of turns into this scolding kind of thing and all that. I hope that's not the way it comes off today. You're not young whippersnappers or anything like that, in my mind. you're perfectly good young people. We've got a wonderful bunch of them here. But we want to be sure that we don't be a fool. And I want the adults to overhear this lesson this morning. And none of us want to be fools. We certainly don't want to raise our kids to be, but we shouldn't be either. Sometimes kids are foolish. They become foolish because they have foolish parents. I mean, just put that out there, because that's true. A lot of parents are very foolish, and so the kids just follow suit, and they become fool or never grow beyond the fool stage. What is a fool? Well, I think there's a lot of ways we can describe that. A fool is simply someone who hates to do something that they're told. That's the way Proverbs uses it most of the time. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's describing a fool in terms of Proverbs, most of the Proverbs address it that way. Now, there's certain activities that sometimes associated with that. So the fool obviously does things that shows that he did not take the instruction he got. Now, if he's not getting that instruction, that's the parenting part, right? So he's getting instruction. The fool is one who doesn't want to hear it. He wants to do his own thing. He wants to kind of go his own way. And that's the way that typically the book of Proverbs uses that term. And it's kind of that kid there. Let me just kind of stipulate that every kid's done that. I think. I mean, I'd be very amazed if they're not a person in here, adult, no matter how old you are, when you didn't do this. You did not want to hear what your parents had to say. You didn't want to hear the instruction. Sometimes adults do that. Sometimes you don't want to hear the instruction. You plug your ears, you don't just hear it. Or it's cognitive dissonance, you know, it just kind of goes over your head. You don't want to relate to it. But that's the way the Proverbs describe a fool, someone who despises wisdom instruction. And obviously, if you stay in that state, you can't be a Christian. You can't be a Christian. You're not going to get to heaven if you stay in the place where you just despise the wisdom and instruction that you get from that. So let's turn to Ephesians chapter 6. And while you're turning there, I want you to note two things real quickly. I want you to know what comes before and what comes after. What comes before Ephesians chapter 6, 1 through 3 is Ephesians chapter 5, 22 to 33. That's instructions to married people. Married people, he says, and I'll just read verse 33, let each of you love his wife as himself. That's the instruction to husbands. Let the wife see that she respects her husband. So here comes a... Thank you, Barrett. Appreciate that. I probably use that. When we're looking at chapter 6, verses 1 through 3 that we'll read in a minute, we're assuming that verse 33 is the type of family that these children are existing in or living in or the type of home they live in. So then after that, verse 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So you have a strong marriage where husbands love their wives and wives respect their husbands, verse 33, chapter 5. Then you have fathers who are not provoking their children. They're bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord or the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So those things are going on. But first, he says, before he goes to the father's part and the parents' part, he says, children, obey your parents. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with the promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, it goes on from there. So he first instructs children. And it's interesting that he's instructing you directly. He's not going through the parents here. He's not saying, parents, tell your kids this. He's talking to children. So it's not me this morning telling you anything. I'm staying very close to the text. I'm simply repeating what Paul said and explaining a few things so that we all understand. But as children, he expected children to be in an assembly like this when this letter was read. These letters were read to audiences like this in the first century. And he expected children to be there and to hear the reading of the letter. And so he says, children. And then he wants them to pay attention. Now, who's he talking about? He's talking about anybody can understand that's young. Probably in this day and time, he was talking to people who were in the elementary stage. So young enough. We have a lot of smart kids here. So he's talking to anyone who can get it and at least pick up most of what's being said or a lot of what's being said on up to maybe children that are in their teens or 20s or whatever. So you are old enough to understand. If you don't, you're off the hook today if you're not old enough to understand. You're still at home. I know that because of what he says in verse 4. Because he instructs children or fathers to bring the children up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord. So you're still at home. And then Paul is speaking directly to you. This is Paul talking to you. He says obey. So children, first word, obey. Obey. And that is what he wants us to do. That's what he expects us to do. And he gives some reasons for that as we move along through this. Of course, to obey is simply to follow the commands, even the wishes, the restrictions, instructions of someone who has authority over you, someone who's in a place of authority. You are to obey them. And it's serious that you do that. So I don't want to be, I don't insult anybody's intelligence, but if these kids are doing this in the church building and someone, an adult, says, please stop running, what do you do? You stop running, right? It doesn't matter who that is. In the church building, if someone comes to you and you're running, that's a safety issue. If someone in authority asks you to stop running, they even say please, at least the first time, then you're supposed to stop. When you do that, you're obeying someone who has some authority over you in this church building. If you want to run outside or whatever, that's up to you. That's great. Get some exercise. But that's obedience is simply hearing and heeding that. And sometimes, unfortunately, you don't see that. I was reading a story, it's a frightening one, and I don't know if I'd take this approach for my own, for this sermon or what have you, but a preacher was talking about a young man who was shot and killed, and it was by a policeman. He was 13 years old. And it was simply because he came out, he had a toy gun, it looked like a real one, but he had a toy gun, and he pointed at the police, and several times they asked him to drop that weapon, as they saw it. And then he went like that, and they shot. He wasn't taught, or he didn't hear. I mean, a lot of things could have happened there. But the point he was making is, if he heard that command from someone who was clearly an authority and didn't do it, he hadn't been taught to obey. And that cost him his life. Well, whatever the stuff around that is, that's teaching our kids. If your kid's running out into the street, I think we all understand that they need to obey. They need to heed the command to stop before they go and hurt themselves. There are a whole lot of places where you see that. Sometimes what parents do is they're very concerned about that sort of thing, but they're not concerned about obedience per se. Well, I'm not talking to parents today so much. I'm talking to the kids. You're to obey. That's what Paul says. You are to obey. And he says, obey your parents. Obey your parents. You know who your parents are, right? So, you know, make sure of that. Here's the thing that's important about this. This is so obvious. You obey your parents. Parents tell you to do something, you do it. You may not agree with it. It doesn't matter. There's only one time, one instance in which you might not and probably should not obey your parents. Just one. And that is if they tell you to do something that is in opposition to God's word. And that's going to be real hard if you're young and so on. But that's the only time that you would have a reason not to obey. Every other time, you obey your parents, regardless of what the command is. God expects your parents to set boundaries. God is expecting your parents to make rules and set boundaries and create this environment that they feel is right for you and command you to obey those things. That's their responsibility. And so you are to obey them. And the more mature you are, the more you'll see that. The more you'll see that this is something that you're to do. There's an example in the Old Testament of Eli and his sons. You know, these sons have a beard, so they're not really young. But Eli was still held responsible for all the stuff they did. His sons made themselves contemptible, and Eli failed to restrain them. And so even older kids, however old they were functioning as priests, and they were doing some despicable things, and God held Eli responsible for him. It cost him his life. So parents are responsible for making sure that you obey. That's their God-given responsibility. Not an option. It's not something they get to choose. And that's why Paul goes on and says, obey your parents in the Lord. In the Lord modifies obey, not parents. He's not just talking necessarily about Christian parents. I guess it was possible, it's certainly possible today and not uncommon, for there to be children who have unbelieving parents. Those children are still supposed to obey their parents. This is a broad command. And when you obey your parents, you're obeying the Lord. Because that's the responsibility God gave the parents. We'll talk about the parents' responsibility in the future. Your responsibility is to obey the Lord. I'm going to read you a little something here that just to kind of give us a break, because it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, you all know you're supposed to obey, and you're all doing that every day perfectly, right? So, but I kind of want to introduce the grandparent element into this, because this is a letter that a young man wrote. He said, "Dear Grandma Kubashevsky, I had lots of fun at your house. I am sorry I dug up all your plants. I am sorry I used a whole roll of toilet paper. I am sorry I put it in the toilet. I am sorry I tried to flush it down. I am sorry the water went all over your floor. I am sorry I bothered your neighbors. I am sorry I made Grandpa mad. I am sorry for putting sand in your rainwater. I am sorry I lost 3 spoons. Grandma, can I come again in a few weeks in the summer?" Now, see, grandparents get to say, "Sure, and we're happy to have you." But there's a big difference between grandparents and parents. We all agree with that, right? The joke is that if I knew how great grandparenting was, I would have had the grandkids first, right? I mean, that's the joke, but that's not the way it happens. And there's this, let's call it, just for our sake, young people, let's call it the common enemy, the parents in the middle. So they say it's easier to unite over a common enemy than it is for love. But the point is, would you say he obeyed? Even Grandpa got mad. That's pretty bad. I don't. Poppy doesn't get mad, so just when you want. But I guess yes, a few times. So what he's saying is that this is the parent's responsibility. What I'm trying to impress you with, that someday you'll understand better, depending on your age, you might understand it very well now. I'm trying to impress you the fact that you're obeying because this is your parents' responsibility. They love you and they want you to do the right thing. And they've got to do that because that's their responsibility before the Lord. They'll stand before the Lord and give account of that. But here's something else. I love it that he doesn't stop there. He says, "For this is right." I get tired of people trying to find a reason why they got to do the right thing all the time. And if it's not the right thing, or they don't feel good about it or whatever, they don't do it. He just says, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Do the right thing. And what he's saying is, obeying your parents is right. It's the right thing to do. It's never the wrong thing to do, with the one uncommon exception, especially in a group like this. Do the right thing. It's right because it's what the Lord expects. Colossians 3:21 puts it a little bit differently in a parallel passage. He says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged." So, verse 20, I should say. "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." And then he goes on to the father part. But this pleases the Lord. He says this is right. Paul says in Ephesians it's right. When he wrote to the Colossians, he said, this pleases the Lord, that's why you do. And James 4, verse 17, "He who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin." So if you have been given, listen, this goes for all of us, but if you've been given clear instructions and you do not do them, those instructions are right, unless you can go with your parents and argue otherwise and they accept that argument. You know it's right. He says to do it because it's right. And if you know it's the right thing to do and do not do it, to you it is sin. It's sin. You are duty bound to do the right thing, to obey. So let's look at some of these reasons to obey that I think we can measure a child's maturity by this. I have to do it because my dad says so. Okay, we've all been there. I did a lot of stuff when I was a kid because my dad just said so. And I had a healthy fear of my father. He didn't beat me or anything like that, but I did have a healthy fear. He demanded obedience. He didn't stutter when he told me to do something. He told me to do it, and he expected me to do it. And if I didn't, there were consequences. That's very Old Testament, I know. But it's the way it is, the way it was for me. And some just function that way. So okay, I have to do it because my dad said so. I actually respect that response up to a point. But then some might say, I'd rather do the right things than do bad things. I feel better when I do the right thing. Now, sometimes kids with this attitude will make the wrong choices, and then they'll feel bad about it. And that's good. That's good that they feel bad about it. But just don't make the wrong choices. I'd rather do the right things than the bad things. I feel better. And then I think this is the optimum level. This is where we want everybody to come. This is university childhood, if you will. I want to do it because I want to please God. I prefer to do the right thing. Now we're kind of back where the parents are. The parents are giving you rules and responsibilities and commands because that is what they are to do to be good parents. There's no way to run a house that I know of that you don't have commands and rules and all of that. We had lots of rules at our house. We had just we kept trying different things. You know, we put them up on the wall and have them checked off. And we had all kinds of different programs we tried to exact obedience. Not that they were disobedient children per se, but they were normal kids. And we tried all those things. But we were trying to move them to this third place. You see that? I've used this example before, but I use it again because it's a good one. You got to say thank you. Thank you. Pretty soon they get in the habit of that. So somebody does something nice and they walk out the door, thank you. So it's say thank you, make them say thank you. They say thank you. Then it's, oh, I'm in the habit of that. Now somebody does something good, I walk out, I say thank you. And they say, I really appreciate that. That was a really nice thing for that person to do. So I am anxious to say thank you, and I feel a little bit guilty if I don't write the thank you note or do whatever it takes to say, express my appreciation. You're trying to get them to that place. I want to do it. I prefer to do it. That's where you want your kids to be. And so that's where you young people, I hope that, I'd love for you to be in the third, but some of you aren't. Some of you are going to be in one and two there. And that's just the natural progression of this thing. But the point is that children are to obey their parents because this is right, and there's some reasons the way we think for that. Let's move on to the next section, verse 2. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Honor your father and mother. What does that mean? For one thing, it applies to young and adult children as well. So whereas the first part we're talking about kids in the home, this actually applies when you get out of the home, when you're out of the home as well. We are to honor our parents throughout our whole life. And that means we respect them. There's a couple of ways that's used. We respect them and we take care of them. That's what to honor means. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5. And verse 3, honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. So what Paul's going to get into that we're not going to get into right now, but he has some instructions to the church in 1 Timothy chapter 5. That instruction has to do with which of the widows are qualified to be cared for by the church. Look at verse 16. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened so that it may care for those who are truly widows. I could run a lot of ways with that. Let the church not be burdened means that the church can be financially burdened by taking on things and responsibilities that they're not take on. But the point is, as it stated up in verse 4, if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn. So they're the ones to honor. So this honoring thing involves a financial commitment in which you take care of your elderly parents. That is part of it. The other part is just respecting them, as we've already talked about, and obeying them when you're young and those kinds of things. You don't have to obey. I don't know that you obey your parents when you get out of the house. I don't think that's true. You certainly respect them, though. You respect the things that they have to say. So you take care of them. In verse 8 of 1 Timothy 5, it says, "But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So as your children grow up, the honoring part is something that goes all the way back to the law, the fifth command in law, and it's something that is still present today, and Paul mentions that. He actually goes back to the old law and uses that as part of his instruction here. And he says it's something that goes on and on and on, and we honor our parents, hopefully, to the day we die in various ways. Honor your father and mother. And then he adds this, which is kind of surprising to me, actually. He says that it may go well with you and that you may live long on the earth. This is the first, he says, is the first command with a promise, verse 2. And then he goes on and again quotes Deuteronomy and comes back and says that it may go well with you. There's some kind of physical benefit from all this. You honor your father and your mother, and then he adds this part. I can see this back in the Old Testament when he's talking to Israel, because he's telling them, okay, kids, young people, honor your father and mother. This is the law. Make sure you do that, and then when you go into the land, you know, you're going to get the land and things will go better for you. The fact that Paul repeats this tells me that, at least as a general rule, maybe in a proverbial way, that there's no question about the fact that your life's going to be better. Your life is going to be better if you obey your parents in the Lord and do what's right. Your life is going to be much better. And just think about that. That's just a fact. Because if you're obeying your parents, you're obeying the Lord. You're obeying and honoring godly parents. We're talking about godly parents. Remember chapter 5, verse 33. Then things are going to go better for you than if you go out on your own, do your own thing. I'll be very specific, and this isn't exhaustive, but you're not going to have to worry about STDs, are you? Sexually transmitted disease. If you are obeying your earthly parents, your godly parents, you're not going to worry about that. You don't worry about being in the wrong place at the wrong time and getting arrested for that. You don't worry about what the police do. If a policeman comes up and talks to you, your conscience is going to be clean. You're not going to be worrying about that. You're not going to be ODing on anything if you have obeyed your godly parents in the Lord. If you've done that, those things can't happen to you. They just won't happen to you. Unless somebody does it to you, but it's not going to be you doing it. You don't worry about a broken home, broken marriage, unhappy marriage. When you get to that point, your home's not going to be a broken home. You're not going to be, if your parents are godly parents and they taught you and instructed you and you obeyed them, you're going to have a godly parent, a godly home and a home that, and a marriage that lasts just like your parents did. I love it when we go to weddings and you have like great grandparents and you have grandparents and you got parents. And these people are getting married, and they've all been married for 40, 50, 60, 70 years. And yet, when people hear that today, when that happens, they go, oh, it's unusual to hear that, to hear people been married that long. I mean, Christy and I, 48 years in September. My parents, over 50 years. Her parents are 69 years coming up, 70 years. Coming up. Legacy. And they actually were on her side of the family, actually the start of it, because their parents didn't have that great a home. So they're kind of the start of that. But the point is that here's this, it just follows. Sometimes, you know, we make the appeal so often almost purely on spiritual grounds. We say, okay, if you do this, then you get to go to heaven. I didn't care anything about going to heaven when I was 13. I wasn't thinking about that. I wasn't thinking about dying. The only thing I did think about once in a while, as I mentioned before, was, you know, maybe Jesus coming back, because that was talked about a lot, and I didn't want to be, you know, sitting in the wrong place and Jesus came back. So, but that was sometimes kind of a fleeting thought. I didn't think I was going to die. I didn't think that. And most people don't. Most people live. Paul says that. Some people don't, and it's sad. We've experienced that here. But when you do the right thing, when you do what your parents ask you to do, and they're godly parents who love God and want you to do the right thing, it's going to be better for you. You don't have to worry about this stuff. You don't have to worry about getting bitter and hostile and all that, because you'll be a forgiving person. You'll be a forbearing person. You'll be someone who has good character. You'll find a good husband or a good wife because you're a person who's marriageable, because you've built character, because you've obeyed your parents who aimed you in that direction. So, that's ran off the page, it looks like, but good. Anyway, all this and you get heaven too. Barbara Griffin used to have that in her home, as mentioned, when they lived out on the Peach Ranch, and they were very happy to be there. It was a wonderful life. Wasn't it that great? I mean, they thought it would be, though. But anyway, they got out there, and they had this sign, all this in heaven too. And it's not that heaven is an afterthought. It's the fact that, okay, there's a good life. You can establish a good life on this earth if you just kind of focus in on what God has told us to do. And as children, if you just obey your parents who want the best for you and are giving you godly advice and biblical advice, focus on that, and things will work out. You've heard me talk a lot about the process. Well, the process in this case is simply doing what God says. And it starts at young ages with obeying your parents, for that's right. That's the right thing to do. Do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Don't have some ulterior motive for doing it. Do it because it's right, no matter how you feel about the particular act of obedience itself. Do it because it's right. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, that you may live long in the land or on the earth. That's the instruction to you. I'm on to the parents starting next week. But it starts here. I hope you heard that. All right, we're going to turn to number 115. And this is a song that talks about Malachi 4:2, I believe. Talks about having God having healing in his wings. And yeah, he says in Malachi 4:2, "But for you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in his wings, and shall go out leaping like calves from the stall." Healing in his wings. Why would you need healing? Why would you need healing? You need healing when you're sick. Sin makes us sick. It makes us sick. It makes us sick in sometimes physical way. I mean, there are times when sin can affect you physically. Most of the time, it's a spiritual sickness. And hopefully we never reach the point where we don't feel that anymore, where it's not something that's not affecting us, where we've kind of gotten calloused. Hopefully we never reach that point. So what we do, we come to this place where we feel, I need healing, where do I get it? The Bible's very clear about where you get it, and we're going to sing about it. You get it from God. He's got healing in his wings. And if you're not a child of God, we've been talking about being a child. Everybody's been a child, or is one. And there's a way to become a child of God, and that is through the waters of baptism. If you haven't done that, then you're not yet in that place. You're not yet in that relationship with God. And we want to invite you to do that. I want to be dead, as Romans 6:11 says, we want to be dead to sin, alive to Christ. If you want that this morning, then we invite you to come as we stand and sing.